I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points. I'm your host, Jake Painting. As usual, the podcast is brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network, a part of the Tainus Hoopers family. Today, I'm joined by Tainus Hoopers Editor-in-Chief, Kyle Tighe. What's going on, man?
How's it going, dude?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. It's been a little while since I've podcasted. I guess I've been moving houses and stuff, so it's been a little bit busy over here, but we're finally back. Today we'll just do a little bit of bubble notes. You know, the Wolves bubble's started kicking off this week, I think, or next week, and then obviously the Orlando bubble with the playoffs is raging on and into the conference finals. So to start off with, I know you were on the press call, Kyle, with Gerson Rosas about the Wolves bubble and about the intra squad kind of scrimmages that are going on. What are your thoughts and what are some things, I guess, that stood out to you from that?
Well, I think the first thing that stands out is that it was basically the first, you know, what is it? It was September. It was last Wednesday. So it was the first real media availability that the team has had basically since they had media availability in May that was like, hey, we're officially done. We're not invited to the bubble. So if you're a Wolves fan and you're, you know, hungry for anything newsworthy, it kind of feels like they're starting to pick up again. So last week, the way that their bubble breaks down is that they basically got as many of the guys in last week, kind of some just one on none, playing against the coaches and stuff. So if a guy comes in, he has the court to himself type thing under these current protocols for COVID. But then starting Monday, September 21st, that's when they're going to go into more of their bubble like situation. So if you're familiar with downtown Minneapolis, they're, you know, the Target Center and their training facility are all in the same area. And then there's also a really nice hotel. So I believe all the players and staff and coaches will kind of be sequestered into their own little mini Minneapolis bubble. And then they're going to start being able to get into some 5-on-5 stuff. And kind of the biggest takeaways, you know, listening to Gerson and Ryan talk was that they're not going to be able to, you know, not going to be able to do too much in a 2-week span, but just the ability to get those guys under the same roof is huge, especially when you think about how new this entire roster is. The trade deadline seems like it was 14 years ago, but it was just this past spring when they basically flipped over everyone but Josh and Carl. So just having those guys in, kind of getting them, you know, just learning where guys, you know, if you're a point guard, learning where guys like to catch on a certain pass or post entry or just basic little things. They're not gonna have the chemistry of the Heat or the Nuggets in 2 weeks, but I think it's just really big. Gerson and Ryan sounded so excited to have the turnout that they've had. I know you wanted to talk about that a little bit, so I think it's exciting times. We're still about 2 months out from the draft, but I think now you'll start to see more guys in for practice, for training sessions, and we'll start to kind of build some momentum here as we enter the draft and free agency and whenever the hell the season starts.
Yeah, exactly. And to your point, which I think is a good one, is even someone like, you know, D'Angelo Russell, who I guess we all assume just slots into this team and just kind of knows where guys want the ball already because he's shown that he can be a reliable facilitator in the past. It's definitely not the case. I think he needs as much time as anyone to really, you know, acclimate himself with this team and learn where guys like the ball, especially Karl-Anthony Towns, since obviously they only played one game together. But it's really good to know that those two guys, Towns and Russell, are there. Malik Beasley, who, despite, you know, being a restricted free agent, is going to be there, which I think is pretty positive signs in terms of him returning in the free agency. period. And I think that just, getting everyone there and getting like a mini training camp kind of thing while we're still waiting to decide, I guess, when the season's going to resume next season, or, you know, how long they're going to be off. Is it going to be a year? Is it going to be 8 months? Either way, they really need as much time as they can to gel, especially when you're second last in the Western Conference. So I think we've spoken about this before, that there's really no negatives to the bubble, as long as everyone's doing it safely and everyone stays healthy, then I think there's really no negatives at all.
Yeah, and when I was one of the talking points from Gerson was just talking about Malik Beasley. You know, like, obviously Towns and Russell are here kind of headlining the roster. But for a guy like Malik Beasley, who, you know, doesn't have to show up, he is a restricted free agent. But they just lauded his work ethic. It's kind of a running joke, but it's like basically a battle between Beasley, Towns, and Russell about who can get in earlier. So Carl gets in at 6, and Russell got in at 7, and then the next day Beasley wanted to get in at 5. So it's good to see that those guys want to work. I mean, I'm sure, you know, Carl's gone through a ton of stuff this offseason with his mom and with other things, but I just think it's cool to see those guys want to work. And like I said, again, they're not going to be able to build the chemistry or become a playoff contender in this 2-week bubble, but it's good to see what you got. They got to bring up some guys from Iowa too. So they have I think the roster that they have at the bubble is about 20 people. So you get to see some guys, and when you have a front office like the Wolves do, and they got, you know, another thing that we might talk about, but you know, that they got to keep Sachin Gupta around. When you have smart guys like that, those guys need data. They need information. They need, you know, just more and more samples of things to make decisions. So getting guys in for 2 weeks of just shooting in at Mayo Square and working out is big for them. So it'll be good to see what they got. It'll be good to see what they don't have, which is still a ton of holes. But it can only help. Like you said, it can only help. There's really no – I doubt they're going to be going super hard, so I don't think there's an injury risk. But you got to play basketball. They haven't played since March, so it could be until March 2021 that we tip off. And these guys just got to get their competitive juices flowing again. So good news all around. And they had a good showing, so I'm excited.
Yeah. And I guess looking at things that I'm excited for in the bubble, I think, well, I guess first before that, there's probably two more notable things that come out of that, the roster and, you know, the mix-up of the team that's going to be there. One, I think, is movie star Juancho Hernan Gomez. It obviously came out that he's not with the team because he's shooting a movie with Adam Sandler, I believe. So, strange news, kind of funny, but I guess, yeah, like it's a weird one because he's a free agent. I guess it kind of makes for headlines that maybe he won't be coming back, but yeah, they've officially stated that he's out of the country filming a movie. So congratulations to Juancho.
And listen to Ryan and Rosas talk. I mean, they both sounded like they kind of said it with some humor that, like, you know, it wasn't a huge deal that Juancho had a prior commitment that he really wanted to be there. But it's also just like the most 2020 thing ever that this free agent is just filming a movie with Adam Sandler and he couldn't show up to a bubble. Like, that just is a Mad Lib in itself. So it's a bummer, though, because for a guy like him, I don't – you're much better at this than I am, but, like, I don't really know what the market will be like for him this offseason. Just based on, you know, salary cap and who has money and who doesn't. I think they want to keep him at the right price, obviously. But, again, I don't think it's a big deal that he's not in Minneapolis, but I also think for him – it does kind of suck because there's going to be guys like Jared Vanderbilt or other guys that are going to get a little more run that, you know, could kind of usurp him in the rotation if they look really good. So it's a bummer, but like I said, he can maybe make some money this year in free agency and win an Oscar. So good for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd turn down a chance to be in a movie. So, yeah, like I said, good for him. But it would be nice, I guess, if he could be there just because they really would want to see what, obviously they've seen 14 games of him, but they want to see more from Juancho and really find out how he fits, especially next to town. So a bit of a bummer that I guess they won't see that and they'll have to go into restricted free agency a little bit blind, to, you know, in terms of playing with Towns and how he meshes with this roster completely. But you know, good for him. And
I was gonna say, devil's advocate, it might be good. Like maybe they just, there's even less tape of Juancho Hernan Gomez.
Yeah.
And people forget about him in a sense, and he gets a really, you know, the Wolves get him back for, I don't know, let's just say the Jake Lehman special or something, you know, like 3 years, $12 million or something. But I when he wasn't on the list, everyone kind of was like, oh my God, where's Juancho Hernan Gomez? And my thought was like, good guy, good player, but like if we're worried about him, we suck anyway. So like I don't even know how hyped they are to have him be he's not the long term starting power forward, but even game one starting power forward. So
yeah,
I don't think
I'd be surprised if he was the starting power forward next season, and probably a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I think they'll be aggressive this offseason and try to figure out some other person to put there. I'm guessing they would love his energy and his ability to shoot off the bench, but yeah, like I said, film a movie, got it, makes sense. This whole situation, this whole year has been wild, so it's probably hard for him to get out. But the Wolves will move on, and they'll get to work in their own bubble.
Yeah, exactly. So the last note that I had was Amari Spellman, not with the team. I know from day dot, as soon as he arrived as part of the Golden State trade for D'Angelo Russell, he hasn't been with the top team. He's played a little bit in the G League. He played pretty well in the G League. He played pretty well with Golden State before he was traded. But obviously, there's something going on behind the scenes there. I don't think he wants to be in Minnesota. And I guess if he doesn't want to be in Minnesota, they kind of don't want him. So I guess he's not included in the roster, which means he's probably, you know, well on the outskirts of the team and definitely up to be moved for probably anything at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on in 2020 that I must have just missed when Amari Spellman became an all-star that could dictate his own terms. but I do know that, like I said, when the Russell Wiggins trade happened, from what I understand and from what I was told, Spellman was one of those guys that was kind of like the Warriors, like, no, you have to take him. Because even that type of small contract, the Warriors needed to carve out as much room as they could for down the road. And for trade exceptions and all those different sorts of things. So
and to dodge the luxury tax, which they've been paying for years, and the repeater tax. So move to get rid of a small amount of salary is good for them.
And if you're a team like Minnesota, you're obviously more than willing to take on a guy like him. Because I mean, I'm not the cap guy, so this is more of a you or a Dane. But you know, I think if they don't get him in that deal, the Wolves themselves are under the luxury tax.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think they kind of just swallowed the bullet and stuff and brought him in. And then I know that they had asked him to, like, hey, we want to send you down to Iowa and, you know, let you get some reps. And I think he was, like, offended, which, again, I don't think we're going to do a whole podcast on Amari Spellman. But, there's multiple stories now of red flags with him that are off the court type stuff. Yeah. So you would have hoped that a guy like him who's been kind of bounced around and not had a chance would love to go down to Iowa and just put up 40 and 20 for a couple weeks. But, I would highly doubt that they'll probably decline his option if they haven't already. And I would imagine that he's not going to be on the team. He'll be in some sort of deal or draft night swap or something. So I think his tenure here will probably be less exciting than Evan Turner's, who was already also, I don't think, was on the roster. So I don't know what he's up to, but they got to cut some fat.
Yeah, at least Evan Turner got onto Twitter and recruited D'Angelo Russell the minute he got to Minnesota. So at least he did something good for the franchise, whereas Spellman kind of just been a downer the whole time.
Yeah, we can definitely retire E.T.'s jersey just for that fact alone. But yeah, so like I said, they'll go into Monday, starting Monday, September 21st, with a pretty exciting roster, and it's obviously kind of headlined by Towns and Russell. But like I said, Beasley. We got Josh Okogie, Jarrett Culver, Jordan McLaughlin, Keelan Martin, Lehman, James Johnson flew up from Miami, which was good. And then they also had some of those, like I said, those Iowa guys. So I don't know if you were a fan of this guy, but that Canyon Berry.
I just love his name.
Yeah, Canyon Berry.
Anyone named Canyon Berry is, I'm a fan.
Right. Jacob Evans, he'll be in the bubble. He was part of that deal with Golden State. And then I think this is an Iowa guy too, but that Lindell Wigginton, which to me, when I saw that name, I totally thought just like Andrew Wiggins with a mustache, you know, like it was a made up guy, but,
guy incognito.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they got some guys that they can kind of see, but, the biggest thing is that they got Towns and Russell in. They can start to work on their chemistry. Like, this is a broken record at this point, but we've seen them play all of one game together against the Raptors. So just the more reps, it's just reps. When you watch these teams right now in the bubble, like Miami and Boston and Denver, who I know we're going to talk about, it's just reps, just repetitions of getting your guys in pick and rolls and switches and, you know, doing all these different things. So it's good. I'm excited. We survived. If you're listening to this and you're a Timberwolves fan, I cannot thank you enough. We survived the weirdest summer ever. And I think now you're going to start to see some more news, some more media stuff, and some more availability. And it should be kind of all building towards that draft and free agency. So
just one last thing that I'm not sure if you know the answer to this. So I might be putting you on the spot a little bit. I know Darren Wolfson said on his podcast that they'll be looking to stream or, you know, record in some fashion the scrimmages. Was there any word on that in the press conference?
You know, that didn't come up in the press conference, and Doogie was on that media availability. But I'm probably wondering if they're probably trying to hammer some of that out. I mean, from my experience talking to the front office people, they are a very kind of, how do I want to say, yeah, not close-minded, but like they're close to, they like to keep their things close to the vest. They don't want to share too much.
Yeah.
But I also know that, you know, Gersan is a very smart man, and he knows that we basically have, as a franchise, there's been nothing to talk about for 6 months. So I don't know how we're still even doing this whole thing, but they kind of got to re-engage the fan base a little bit. So yeah.
And there's no way to lose when you're playing your own team because someone's going to look good.
Right, and you know, it might not be like a live stream type scrimmage. And like I said, we should also comment too, the Wolfson is very plugged in. So I mean, if he said that, I'd take his word on it. But even just like they'll probably, like our friend Shabazz Khan, who's running social for them, they'll probably splice up some videos and stuff just to give. I mean, we're so hungry to see. I mean, if they just post a 5-second video of a 2-on-0 pick and roll between Carl and D'Angelo Russell that results in a dunk, like that'll just get us all back
explode.
Engaged. Yeah. So, but no, that'll be interesting. Like I said, I'm guessing if that stuff happens, you know, it'll be all over Twitter. It'll be all posted and stuff on the website. So that would be fun. We deserve it, man. Like we deserve to watch these guys play, even if it's against, you know, 5 chairs or 5 coaches. So
yeah, for sure. So speaking of bubbles, speaking of teams playing and playing well, obviously the playoffs are going on still at the moment. Western Conference Finals, we just finished watching that game. Anthony Davis hit a 3 to beat the Denver Nuggets on the buzzer. It's been a really fun playoffs, I think. I think the no home crowds has certainly played a part. I think just the intensity's been a lot better than I guess some doubters would have believed it could be in the bubble with no fans. I just think it's been really fun the whole way through. And the team, I wrote about this a few days ago, it came out. So head over to Chain of Supers if you want to kind of check that out and kind of cross-match it with what we're going to talk about. But the Denver comparison to Minnesota, I think, is a really prevalent one and one that I think all Minnesota fans should be keeping an eye on and should be rooting for Denver, to be honest, in the playoffs, just because there's the narrative that you couldn't win with a big man was really gaining legs over the last few years, and rightfully so, because no one could win with a big man, and I don't think Denver will win the whole thing, but they've definitely showed that they are a Western Conference elite, and with obviously Nikola Jokic as their centerpiece, and even Jamal Murray as their second star. And I think even just with those two straight away, you can make the comparison to Towns and Russell. Obviously not the same players, and there's a lot to do for Towns and Russell to have the same sort of team success as those two guys. But straight away, I think, you know, offensive-minded players who aren't great defenders, but have got to a level where they at least scrape by defensively, but then they really just outgun teams with their offense. I think that's a really good comparison to make just with the Timberwolves franchise, you know, centerpieces. And then they run a 5-out system. And unless Jokic is posting up, they run a 5-out system, same as Minnesota. I mean, the comparisons are there. There's also a lot of differences. But I just think that Denver are a team that we should be watching.
Yeah, you know, I think you were humbly kind of announced that article that you wrote, but I just want to go back to that one more time and just stress again that last week you wrote, I thought, the best thing you've ever written, comparing kind of, you kind of touched on in the beginning of the article about how basically when people think of the Wolves now, they think, are they going to try to emulate the Houston Rockets with their kind of, you know, five-out system, or are they going to try to emulate the Brooklyn Nets with kind of their more pace and space and all those things? And they both, those two organizations have their own similarities, but the reason people think Rockets and they think Nets is because that's kind of what the Wolves front office is made of, is people from the Rockets, people from the Nets. And I thought you brilliantly pivoted to talk about a different team that no one has really brought up, and that's the Nuggets, a team that has basically built themselves off of kind of this offensive-minded point guard-center combo that can't really get stops. Or, you know, can occasionally get a stop, you know, like we talk about with the Damian Lillard type guy, but they're basically just going to try to out-efficient you and out-gun you. And it's been awesome to watch. And I think you touched on some pretty interesting things about the, you know, the Russell and Towns comparison to Murray and Jokic, but also kind of the secondary, tertiary pieces of what you do to build around those guys. Because for better or worse, and I know this is a whole nother 9-hour podcast, but for better or worse, this is the core. Gersan has signed his, this job, he has signed his life away to Towns and Russell. That's it. That's what, that's going to be their core. And whether or not you believe in that or not, I know there's pluses and minuses, but that's what it's going to be. And I think it's a uplifting, optimistic opportunity to see that another team is kind of built a team similarly, and they're being really successful doing it. So I'm intrigued. And like you said, the kind of the renaissance of the big man, I think now we owe it to Nikola Jokic to say that for now he is a tier, or, you know, he is above Carl in terms of the rankings, just because he's doing it on a night in and night out basis.
And he's just been unreal. I know Murray's got a lot of the plaudits, but he has been unreal in the playoffs.
Absolutely unreal. And, I mean, you know, he deserves everything he's getting. He's moved himself up into kind of this tier one star potential in the view of kind of the national view of things. But I also think that Carl has, and this is the homerism in me, but I think Carl has all the skills to match that or be better than him. He's not the passer that Jokic is, but I think he's a superior shooter. I think Carl's stock, and some of it's just, you know, deserved, because, you know, he would mope a lot, he would complain about things, and he got injured. But I mean, no one's really seen Carl play basketball now in almost 8 or 9 months. So I think it's a little out of sight, out of mind type thing in terms of how many, I mean, I've seen, and maybe again, maybe I'm just still drunk on a Sunday from the Kool-Aid, but I've seen people talking about how, like, I wouldn't trade Bam straight up for Carl, or I wouldn't trade so-and-so straight for Carl. And it's like, whoa, okay. What's going on here? So
the recency bias is at an all-time high during the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's for sure. I mean, when you watch a Bam, you know, Adebayo go off and have a great game, you're just so caught up in the moment that you want to be like, dude, this guy is a top 12 player in the league. But you know, in Bam's defense, he's been awesome. Jokic has been awesome. Anthony Davis has been awesome. So it's just nice to see that these teams can win. All those guys are complete apples, steaks, and ice cream in terms of comparisons. But it's cool to see that big guys still have a place in the league, and you can win if you build around them properly. So that's the challenge, obviously, for Gersan and his staff, is can we build properly around him? And I think they can, but it'll be interesting to see what they do. And it starts with the draft, and it starts with getting more shooting in there, but also getting guys that can defend, because I think people are selling Carl and D'Angelo short a little bit. I think they can play better defense, but they're also limited. Like, D'Angelo Russell's just never going to be an above average defender. He's not. But if you can get him close to just that average line, I think you can start to do different things and have kind of a lift your ceiling a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think the differences between them, like I said, I outlined this in probably too many words in the article, but I think the differences, firstly, is I don't want to say the coaching, because I still have faith in Ryan Saunders, and I know he was kind of learning on the fly last year with a roster that was just, you know, getting turned over massively injuries, the whole tit and caboodle he dealt with. So I definitely want to give him the credit there for kind of navigating through that. And I guess he was never gonna, they were never gonna win last year with what went on and the huge roster turnover. But I think getting the way that Mike Malone gets Jokic in positions to facilitate and to score, gets him in positions where he's at an advantage, where the defense is tilted in his, you know, in his direction, in his, to his advantage. I think that's just, it's awesome coaching, and that's the one thing offensively that I really want to see Saunders do with Towns and with Russell. I mean, with Murray and Russell, it's a little bit different. You kind of, you know, you run them off a lot of pick and rolls. They create a lot of their offense for themselves, which we'll get to shot creators in a second. But when talking just of Towns and Jokic, they're not really guys, big men in general aren't really guys who can create their own shot off the dribble all the time. That's why, you know, Towns has never been a high usage guy in the clutch. That's why Murray still shoots, you know, more shots in the clutch than Jokic, even though Jokic is just an unbelievably clutch player. I think he just scored 11 points in about 3 minutes in the game that just finished in the last, you know, last 3 minutes. But you need to get them in positions where they can score. The way Malone runs Jokic off these little curl screens, you know, these pin downs where he comes off and he curls, and then all of a sudden, you know, what, his defender's guarding him and another player at the same time, the screener, and that really just opens up his little floater game. It opens up his mid-range. It obviously opens up the crazy passing vision that he possesses, and it's just, I think that there's a lot of things that Saunders could learn just from watching that, or just straight steal. Like, it's not groundbreaking stuff to run guys off pin downs, but the way Towns moves so much better than Jokic, shoots so much better than Jokic. I mean, you can run him off pin downs at the 3-point line all game, and he'll probably give you, you know, six threes a night. So I just think that would be really beneficial for them would just be to get Towns moving a little bit more. I know they really wanted to run with that five-out system where Towns runs the plays from the top of the key, and I think that's a good tactic. I think that's better than what Tibbs was doing for sure, and Malone runs a lot of that with Jokic as well. But when Jokic doesn't have the ball, when you know, next season when Murray has when D'Angelo Russell has the ball, sorry, and Towns is off the ball, I think really getting him running off screens, moving into space rather than just post-ups or spot-up threes, that'll really unlock Minnesota's offense, I think.
Yeah, and I didn't want to interrupt you there because you pretty much worded that so eloquently, better than I ever could. But I did want to – you started that kind of – that spiel with talking about Ryan Saunders. And it's Sunday night, so I've had a glass of wine. So I just want to quick say, like, I understand that, like, a lot of people don't like Ryan. I'm pretty much on the – like, I've got to talk to him. So he's a good person, but I don't know if he's a good coach. I really don't. And I think a lot of people wish he was gone. And, you know, they want to talk about nepotism, and they want to talk about, you know, the Saunders connection with ownership and Glenn and all that stuff. I get it. But I think it's important to know that I don't know if Ryan's a good coach. I think Gerst trusts him. But Ryan did his job last year. And they'll never say this, but people might not like it. But they tanked. Like, that's a thing. They tanked. There's no debate. They forced.
If they're going for playoffs, Towns does not sit out 20 games with an undisclosed knee injury.
No, right, exactly. And they would have just, if you go back, I mean, God forbid, we're in 6 or 7 months of quarantine. We have nothing else to do. I've gone back and just watched random ass games. Like, they just ran weird lineups. And now some of that, you could argue, is, well, is that because Ryan doesn't know what he's doing? Fair. My thought was that they were never trying to win games, and they will never admit that, and that's totally cool. But they did what they were supposed to do, and that was suck, because they wanted to have the best pick possible, even if the draft is looked at as a down year. So they did what they had to do. So they have the first-round pick now, or the first overall pick. They got Russell in. Gerst worked his magic. And now, if you don't like Ryan, that's fine. Like, the clock is on him now, because they have to start winning. They don't technically have a pick next year unless, you know, it's top three protected, but they're gonna make moves between the draft and free agency to build this thing up, and they're not gonna be able to beat Denver next year, because I think like a good wine, it just takes some time. and you have to kind of build. You know, the NBA has shown that. You can't really cut corners to win a title. You can't really cut corners to be a contender. Even like a team like the Toronto Raptors, they were building for years and bringing in pieces and kind of putting in their culture, and then they got Kawhi and they took that leap. The Heat are the same thing. They're building that culture and building. They get Butler. They take that leap. So for the Wolves, they're going to need to build and build. And if they're losing games that they should be winning, Ryan's gone. So stop. Like, relax. If he's not, they're not going to continue to roll him out there if he's a poor coach. And the pressure's on him now. He got a honeymoon year. He got to go to the Bahamas. He got to just sit on the sidelines. And now the pressure's on him. But it's just the idea that Ryan didn't get the most out of the team last year is such a stupid argument, because that was never the goal. They didn't want him to grind that team to win 31 games. So,
and the team never had enough talent to even get the most out. Getting the most out of the team was only going to be 30 wins at most. Like, that team was never going to make the playoffs. And really, we should have known that. I think most people did. But, like, we should have known that from day dot. Like, Bahamas be damned. Like, this team was never talented enough to make the playoffs, and that's just the truth of it.
And this is such a fact. Like, anyone who listens to this pod, anyone who watches basketball, the worst thing you can do in the NBA is be average. The worst thing you can do is be 41-41 for a bunch of years, because you never get a good enough pick. You know, unless you have just an elite front office like the Heat or something, but you never get a good enough high enough pick to really shake anything up, and you just never can really get out of the mud. So yeah, it sucks. And I know I'm too optimistic sometimes. It sucks that the Wolves were so bad last year. But they had to literally, like, bottom out to have really any chance to make this a sustainable thing. Because when they tried to just sell their soul to the devil to be competitive under Tibbs, they kind of did that. And they got flushed in 5 games. And then everything just blew up. So that's not how you build. Looking back at your Denver thing, that's not how you do that. And you didn't touch on this in your piece, because I think, like you said, you had, like, what, 4,000 words, and I think you just got tired. But, you know, the Denver Nuggets, they never sold their soul. They were they were in on the Kyrie Irving sweepstakes. They were a team rumored for, like, trying to get Anthony Davis. They were a team, I think, like, one of the 9 teams trying to get a Paul George deal or a Kawhi deal. Like, anytime a superstar came up, they, like, I think I have this right, but I think they turned down at one time Jamal Murray for Kyrie Irving. Which at the time, you're like, that's crazy. But they knew that they wanted to build organically, and they never cut corners. And look where they are now. Like I said, obviously, they're probably not going to beat the Lakers in this series after what we saw tonight. But they're a good team, and they have the pieces to maybe bring in a third guy or to continue to develop guys like Michael Porter Jr. So I told you this before we recorded that I was going to do a Ryan Saunders rant, and I feel so much better about it now. But again, if you don't like Ryan, your wish should come true soon, because the pressure's on him now. They're going to have the pieces next year that they need to. If we have an 82-game season, they need to sniff 500. That's a goal. And if they come
on, they need to be the Denver team that Minnesota beat that year with Jimmy Butler. They need to be at that level where you can miss the playoffs, but you have to at least give the players and the fan base a taste of winning, a smell of it. You know, you need to get close enough where next season, you know, the 2 seasons from now, you are heading into the season thinking like, yeah, we're going to be good this year. Like, look at what we did last year. We were right on the cusp. They need to have that kind of season at minimum. And I'm not 100% confident they will, but I think they definitely have a chance to do that.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, and you know, this goes back, I got to give credit to Dane Moore, but he's always talked about too that no matter what happens, and he said a lot of this before the pandemic, but it's always kind of been about the summer of 2021. You know what I mean? Like, if the Wolves can do some things in the draft this year and some free agency stuff and kind of have a good season and then try to strike, like, you know, if you can build up a Jarrett Culver who looks like he has a reformed kind of shot mechanics, and you can get some more out of Josh Okogie and whoever, let's say Anthony Edwards is the pick, or you get something for him. You kind of blossom these picks up a little more, these players, and then in next summer, that's when you strike for your third star. That's when you kind of make your strike to go from, you know, 41-41 to get that one piece that can maybe put us at the 50 win mark. And again, maybe it all fizzles, and then 2 years from now, it's a huge blow up and trade Russell and trade Carl. But that's the plan. That's the plan, is to try to get a huge leap in win total next year with the guys they've got. And then next summer, put yourself into that, you know, trying to find home court advantage in the playoffs. I know that sounds crazy because the team won like 18 games, but that's their goal. That's what we have to buy into, because we really have nothing else. And I don't think the team has ever had the decision makers and the assets to try to make it work. They've had some smart people, but never the assets. They've had some assets and clearly some dumb bleeping people in there. But now they have them both, and that's the plan, is to model this, like you said, model this like the Nuggets.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think just the one last point on the Nuggets, and I know we've spoken about them for a while now, but it's drafting and signing players on the margins that they really hit on Denver. I mean, they got your Grant. I know they paid a lot for Paul Millsap, but they also got Jeremy Grant. They're both integral parts of their defense. I wrote about that a lot, that the way they help on the backside, especially because they run the hedge system, Denver, where Jokic gets up at the line of the screen and defends that way rather than in the drop like Towns does. Those backside defenders like Jeremy Grant, Paul Millsap, they really do a lot of coverage. They mop up a lot of messes. And they're guys that they brought in from free agency. Like, they overpaid for Millsap, but they overpaid because they really needed him, and they knew that they had their two stars on rookie-style deals still at that time. Grant, they paid, you know, $9 million a year. That's looking like a bargain at the moment. You've got guys like Monte Morris, Torrey Craig, Gary Harris is probably a little bit overpaid, but still, they're all exceptional defenders, and they're really the guys around the stars that matter so much, as they all play good defense, they all know what to do, they help the helper. You know, when Grant rotates over to help Jokic, then Torrey Craig rotates over to help Jeremy Grant, and that's the kind of thing that Minnesota need to do, and it starts with personnel. And obviously that means, you know, finding someone with the mid-level exception who really, like, they can't really be a flop. Like, you need to do your homework there and choose the right guy, which I'm pretty confident that Rosas and Gupta and whatnot can do that. And then the draft, they've obviously got a lot of draft capital, whether it's, you know, trading for a guy who is your kind of Millsap, if it's a guy who makes, you know, $15 million a year, but is really integral fit to the growth of your team over the next 3-4 years, or whether it's just drafting a guy, you know, drafting three guys, like, and then, you know, you get into a bit of a training camp battle where guys like Noel and Vanderbilt and, you know, the 33rd pick and the 17th pick, they're all kind of duking it out to see who can make the roster. They need to hit on those, because that's what Denver did. That's what the teams who have grown internally have done, that haven't gone and swung for that star. And I know it's as much assets, you know, that we talk about with Minnesota and draft capital and whatnot, it's still just super hard to get a star via trade. So
I think that's also a really good point that you bring up about just like how well they've drafted, because I might be stealing this take, but I haven't really seen it, I don't think, anywhere nationally, but the Nuggets are probably going to lose to the Lakers. They're down 0-2. But they're also technically 4 games away from the NBA Finals. They made a trade at the deadline that literally gave up good players for absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like they probably thought they had contender type aspirations when they made that trade. And again, that was pre-pandemic, so who really knows? But I mean, they traded guys. I'm one of the guys that runs the SB Nation for the Nuggets. I get to talk to him a little bit, and like, they really liked Malik Beasley. They just couldn't find room to play him. They really liked, you know, Hernan Gomez. They just didn't find room to play him. So they traded guys that you don't think they would get some benefit out of having Malik Beasley play in this Lakers series.
You don't think they could have a benefit of giving Wancho 8 to 10 minutes in this Lakers series? They treated guys, I mean, they got back Shabazz Napier, Kedah Bates-Diop, Gerald Green, Noah Vonleh. Those guys, I mean, Gerald Green was shipped out. Those guys have played 0 minutes, I think, in the playoffs. Shabazz Napier was shipped off again. They just had to trade depth for a pick because they were so deep. And that's obviously the Timberwolves' hope, is that at some point they can have so many good players that they just can't even find room to play them. But I just thought that was, you know, it's crazy to look back at that and think that, like, maybe they don't do that. Like, maybe I always wondered at the time, why was Denver doing that? And it was probably because they didn't think they could pay Beasley. So they're like, well, hell, if we can get a first round pick, that's a pretty good deal for a guy that's going to be gone. But Malik Beasley would help them right now. Yeah. You know, like, Gary Harris has not done much. He would definitely be playing for them alongside Murray. So yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, there's a whole lot of things and a whole lot of holes, but one of those things would be just continually hitting on picks and undrafted guys, and at worst being able to flip those guys at the deadline down the road for just late first that you can kind of continuously cycle through and restash your cupboard. So
yeah, and Beasley, speaking of Beasley, I think that's a good segue into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which was just how important shot creators are in the playoffs and, you know, in big games against big teams. I wonder if Beasley is the guy they see being that guy, just because you need to have two shot creators on your team, whether they create shots just for themselves, whether they can create shots for others as well. But like, you need a Goran Dragic and a Jimmy Butler. You need a Jaylen Brown and a Jason Tatum. I mean, LeBron is like four of them combined, so you know he can deal with Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis obviously gets buckets as well, and so does Towns, so does Russell. But I think they really need another ball handling wing, a guy who can set up his teammates, a guy who can get his own shot. I'm not sure whether Beasley is more suited to someone who scores off the catch. Obviously, like most, I was really happy with the way Beasley played. He was obviously, you know, in Fuego the whole time he was in Minnesota, over 20 points a game, 42% shooting on like 8 or 9 threes a game. So I just think that I think he needs to be better off the dribble. I think he needs to be able to break down defenders, kind of bend the defense to his will and create shots for himself and others, just because for the last few playoffs and for a long time, I guess, that it's just so obvious how much you need shot creators and how much guys who can create their own offense and create offense for other people is important. And that's why it's important they got Russell, because he's that kind of guy. He obviously needs to get to the rim a bit more, get to the free throw line a bit more, but there's no denying that he creates his own shot and that he can kind of create advantages for an offense with his passing as well. So
yeah, that's a good point. And you know, one thing is that I think we should mention too is, like, for the Nuggets, I mean, Jamal Murray has such a responsibility to bring the ball up, but they do spell him. I mean, Jokic can bring the ball up. I mean, he can just literally be inbounded the ball and bring it up. But I, you know, when I watch Beasley, and this might either just be the most lazy analysis or maybe a somewhat intriguing analogy or comparison, but like, it'll be interesting to see if they want to make him more of a just a complete just shooter, like a spot up shooter.
Yeah,
come off
that's
picks.
What I wonder as well.
Or if they see, and again, this is a weird comparison, but like, or if they see some Tyler Hero in him, where like, I mean, Tyler Hero, like if Dragic goes and sits or Jimmy's taking a rest, I mean, they just run things through Tyler Hero, which is mind blowing in itself, because he's like 20 years old. But just can you do that for, you know, 4 or 5 straight possessions in the second quarter when you're resting Towns and Russell? Can you have Beasley initiate offense and get in the lane and kick? I don't know. I don't think we've seen the playmaking side of him more. But I know he's a gym rat, so maybe he's working on it. But that would be great. I mean, if he can take the burden of running, you know, a half dozen or a dozen plays a game, it would spell guys and allow Russell to take a break in the corner or not put the onus on Carl. And if he can't, and he's more of just a, you know, a flamethrower who's coming off picks and barely dribbling, then they're going to have to address that in the draft. And that's why I think whatever happened with the Jordan McLaughlin, like, they're going to have to get another ball handler. Because when you touched on that in your article, it's like, yeah, they don't – yeah, I still believe in Josh Okogie and I still believe in Jarrett Culver, but those guys are not at the level right now where they can really initiate offense, really.
No, they're not off the catch shooters, but they're guys who can attack the seams off the catch and kind of create for themselves in a pinch, but you need a guy in the playoffs who can do it and score, you know, 17 plus a night. Like, you need a guy who is your third option at minimum, who can really create his own offense. And I don't know if you saw this, but Malik Beasley has uploaded like a YouTube kind of series. I think there's like only one part out, but it's like half an hour of like all the work he's doing throughout the summer and stuff. So and in that, he said him and his trainer, they were kind of going through things, and they said that his main goals for the off season is to become a better shot creator and to get better at, like, improve his ball handling, find ways to create his own shot. So obviously, you know, we hear those things every summer. Like, I'm sure Carl Anthony Towns' top priority is to become Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, but yeah. Every guy lost all their body fat and has put on 50 pounds of muscle. But no, that's a big deal, though.
But it's good to say that he recognizes that, and that he knows that that's what he needs to do to become that next tier up as a player.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, for as much as we talked about Jamal Murray, who has kind of lifted himself now to be, I would say a superstar. You know, maybe a fringe superstar. Maybe you just want to say a star. But I mean, he deserves the praise that he gets because he is balled out. But so he's light years better than Malik Beasley. But they are the same age. They are 23 years old. So there is still room for development in a guy like Beasley, who, if he's spending 6 months working on not just shooting, he has a great stroke, but working on putting the ball on the ground and working on, you know, finding angles to make passes and stuff. It would be... I mean, I think they're going to keep him. I mean, I think everyone who's listening to this knows he's a restricted free agent, and I don't think the market for him is going to be that big. And I don't think they'll lose him for nothing. I think if it came to a point where it's not going to work, they would do a sign and trade and get some asset back. But I think I know he wants to be here. I think they want to keep him. But the more that he can add to his tool chest and not just be a complete gunner, it's going to be huge for them. Because like you said, even going back a series to watching other teams like the Clippers, or having just multiple guys that can initiate offense, it just makes everything so more dynamic and so much more. Your ceiling just goes, you know, so much higher when you can have multiple guys rather than just constant 60 times a game Russell Towns pick and rolls. Because you see now in the NBA, when the playoffs come, and that's kind of why we're here, trying to build a playoff team, teams start to narrow in on your strengths. So the more options that you can go from those strengths, like a tree, and kind of branch out, the better chance you have to kind of remain competitive. So it'll be interesting to see. You like him, right? You like
Beasley?
Him? Yeah.
Yeah. I really like Beasley. I think that he needs to be in the right role. I think unless he can become that shot creator that we speak about, I don't think he should be a guy who's shooting, you know, 15, 20 shots a night. But I think he's definitely a piece that every team could use, whether it's you know, high usage kind of sixth man gunner, or just a guy who can score 15 points a game and give you, you know, really good shooting, really good shot versatility, where he's always hunting his own shot, a bit like Tyler Hero. Like you said, he doesn't really have the ball handling, but he's that kind of guy who is always looking to get his shot off, and I love that aggressiveness, especially in a guy who really can fill it up. So I think one more note on that, and it kind of tends me as you were speaking of Hero, is I'd love to see Minnesota run those kind of dribble handoff actions that Miami run with Bam and Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, and kind of it's the dribble handoff, and then Bam slips the screen and rolls towards the rim, and you kind of have to pick your poison. Like, do you, you know, commit to Duncan Robinson, which in the Timberwolves case, I guess, would be a Malik Beasley or even a D'Angelo Russell, you know, do you commit to him, or, you know, is any miscommunication on that dribble handoff slip screen, you know, dribble handoff, re-dribble handoff, where they kind of get it and go and give it back? That's just the way they do it in Miami, the constant movement off the ball to get their shooters open and to give their big man lane to the rim. that's so fun to watch, and I just don't see any reason why you can't replicate that with Carl Anthony Towns, who obviously is a way more skilled finisher than Bam. He can, you know, fake the dribble handoff and step back and hit the three himself, and then Beasley and Russell obviously aren't the type of shooters I don't think as Hero on Robinson, but they can definitely, you know, get their own on any night from behind the line. So it's just, there's so many possibilities when you watch the playoffs, and I think I'm just so starved for Minnesota basketball that I just envision how Minnesota can kind of, you know, take this and pick that from one coach and choose this from another coach and really implement it into their own game. And I'm sure Ryan Saunders is thinking the same thing.
Yeah, and I think that's such a great point. Like, I do think in the ideal contender world that Beasley has more of that six-man role, which, again, has evolved in the NBA to not, you know, like, I mean, Lou Williams closes games. Like, it doesn't really matter when you start. It's how you finish. But, I mean, I think because if you run too many minutes aligned with Russell and Beasley as your backcourt, in the, you know, they're both in at the same time, you're just going to almost never be able to have any sort of resistance on defense. But if you can stagger those guys' minutes and then, you know, build leads or do certain things that are just creative, and that's, again, going back to Ryan, like, can he be creative enough to do what Spo does in Miami? But just like I said, finding those ways to maybe have Beasley run offense for 2.5 minutes to spell Russell and stuff, I think it'll be interesting. But, I mean, his shooting was so absurd when he was in that, like, 18-game stint. I don't know how – if he shoots like that over an 82-game season, we're talking about he's one of the five best shooters in the league.
For sure. Like his season – with the pull-up, like, the pull-up threes, I think he shot, like, you know, 48% on, like, three pull-up threes a night. Like, that's, like, no one has ever shot that good for a season. Like, Steph Curry shot, like, you know, 43% on pull-ups one season, and that was, like, you know, the best percentage on high volume of all time. Obviously, way higher volume. It was, like, you know, seven a game or something. But, like, no one hits that kind of pull-ups, and even, you know, the catch-and-shoot, like, I just felt like Malik Beasley hit every shot he took with Minnesota for 14 games straight.
He literally could not have had a better performance in a contract year. Like, it was like,
it
was awesome, but I was just like, oh, shoot, like, this sucks. Like, every time he made a basket, I just literally saw, like, the salary cap just, like, get tighter and tighter. But yeah, no, he's clearly, as someone who understands the numbers like you do, he's probably going to regress. In a sense, because like you said, if he extrapolated that out over an 82-game season, he is Steph Curry. So that's probably not ideal or what's going to happen, but if he's, you know, comes back down a notch or two and he can still give you that night in and night out performance, it's huge. And I don't know what you can see on his YouTube page of his defensive performance against his uncle, but I do think there's an ability there to... I was talking to Dane about this, but I think he has the ability. I think a lot of times he just, like, mentally, like, zoned out. So, like, a lot of times it was mental lapses. And I think, not as a coach, just as a dude who watches this stuff, like, I think that's the easiest to fix, just getting guys, like, locked in and, you know, smelling salt engaged.
And he's not Andrew Wiggins kind of disengaged. Like, he wants to be engaged. He just
doesn't know.
He just kind of, he's I don't think his defensive IQ is very... high, like, but he definitely tries, and he's been the first from the moment he got to Minnesota. He was the first one to say, you know, he needs to be better on defense. The team needs to be better on defense. Like, he just seems very accountable, and that's a really, enticing trait to have, I think.
Which, again, I don't know how good this is going to sound once I listen to it, the Tyler Hero comp, but I mean, Tyler Hero's out there in closing situations and can get a stop. You know what I mean? Like, he's under that Miami culture. He's moving his feet well enough at times that he's not breaking what they're trying to do as a unit. And I think Beasley has the athleticism and the ability and the speed and the lateral quickness to do those things. So, but that goes back to concepts and, you know, David Vanterpool's magic dust. But I think he can defend. So I don't think he's going to be as big of a sieve, especially when the games start to matter more. I mean, that's a part of it. It's like a 23-year-old in a contract year was done it, and the team wasn't even trying to win.
Yeah, I think just from watching back, and obviously, you know, you can never know this as kind of just what you see on the court. I think him and Juancho, I guess maybe just because they come from Denver and they play a completely different defensive system, even though they have kind of similar personnel. But they seem to be the most kind of, I don't know how to say it, like out of touch with each other, you know, like confused with the personnel around them in those 14 games. Like a lot of mistakes where it's kind of like they thought someone was going to help them and they didn't come and help, or they thought the switch was coming and the switch didn't come, or just things like that where they kind of were expecting something to happen where the whole team defensive shell was meant to be, you know, running on a string, but it didn't, and they ended up being at fault for it. They're the guy who, when you watch it, you're like, well, what's Malik Beasley doing? So I think he has a lot to work on defensively. I think he needs to be able to get through screens a lot better. That's he just gets flatlined by screens, or he kind of has to take like two steps to go around them rather than being able to get skinny and get through them like a Josh Okogie does, where he can't just take that one sidestep and just slips through a screen. But Beasley can't do that at all, and that's just a must if you're going to be guarding two guards in the NBA who can mostly dribble and run pick and rolls all game if they need to. So, I do think more time with the team and getting acclimated to the system and to how the way Vanderpool wants to play defense will be more beneficial to him than say a guy like Russell or, you know, someone else who was already like a James Johnson or someone. I think Beasley really needs to learn the system more, and I think he will be a little bit better.
Yeah, and that's why looking now at the draft in 2 months, like that's why the draft will be so important, because like I said, we can talk about Jamal Murray and how like physically small he is and he still is balling, or Tyler Hero, who has like 190 pounds soaking wet. Like these guys don't have a lot of body on them. So it kind of, you know, that's how Russell and Beasley are built. But on the same token, like, Hero's making it work and Jamal Murray's making it work. So, but that's why I think the draft's so important, because, you know, that's why Dane, I think, was excited about a guy like LaMelo Ball, who like is so long, he can help cover up some of those issues, or a guy like Anthony Edwards, who for all his flaws, like he's still built like a tank. I mean, he's a big, sizable guy. So they're a little thin in the backcourt, but that's why I think it'll be even more important to see who they kind of, again, using the Murray-Jokic comp, those guys, I mean, Jokic is a big guy. He's huge, but he's not fast, and Murray's small, but I mean, they got dogs around them. Jeremy Grant, Torrey Craig, like those guys are Paul Millsap. Michael Porter Jr. is an alien. Like those guys are all big, big human beings. So that's going to have to be something they address, because they're small. And that's up for another day, but they got small guys, and they don't. That's one thing, if you don't really dive into the analytics or things, or you just kind of watch the game, that's something to always watch if you're watching old games after the trade deadline. Russell and Beasley just get stuck on picks. On them, and they can't fight through them, and it sucks. So it'll be an emphasis, I'm guessing, in the bubble, and it'll also be an emphasis when they're building up this roster going forward.
And just another note on the small thing is, we've spoken about before, but like a sneaky, underrated, terrible part of Minnesota's season was how badly they rebounded the ball. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like it just seems like they got hammered on the glass every night, especially. Like, I love Robert Covington. I adore Robert Covington, but he just didn't get enough rebounds. And Towns doesn't really rebound outside in zone, albeit, you know, he's a really good rebounder, but you need more. And I think it makes it even harder when your backcourt is Russell and Beasley, and then Josh Okogie is your small forward. And I know Josh can rebound, especially offensive rebound, with the best of them, but that's a 6'4", you know, no one's over 6'4" in your first three positions. And then you've got a 6'7", 8", 9" guy at power forward, and then Towns. Like, it just makes it so hard to rebound. So I think they, like you said, they definitely need to address some sort of size, at least at the three. Like, you need to have a guy who can, you know, a 6'6", 6'7" guy who can grab a couple boards at, you know, maybe it's Layman. Like, he can play that position. And I think Layman's 6'9", maybe. So, like, there's guys on the roster who can do it. Vanderbilt, James Johnson, like. But, yeah, it's an area where they need to address. I don't think they need to go all out to find, you know, the tallest guy possible, or, like, a star has to be this certain height to be a good fit with Minnesota. But I think in the free agency market or the draft, they'll look to pick up someone who has a little bit of size just to bang bodies a little bit when the time comes.
Yeah, it's probably another reason why I think when you hear them talk, and by them I mean like Ryan or Gerson, I haven't heard them talk about as much about focusing so narrow-minded on four, like, you know, essentially four guards and a center. Why I go, like, going to back to the beginning of this with our Oscar nominee, like, that's why I don't know how big of a deal it is if Wancho doesn't come back. Like, he's not the world's best rebounder, and even Covington and stuff, like those guys over an 82-game season, you do need a guy that you can't ask, even though Carl is special and you are paying him all this money, like, you can't ask him to be the best shooting center of all time and then also gobble up, you know, 20 rebounds a game. So that's where, you know, and like, for going back to my Tyler Hero thing, I mean, he's averaging 6 rebounds a game in the playoffs. That's massive. You would never think that guy looks like me. Like, you would never think that guy could put up, he's had multiple double-digit rebounding games. So, yeah, it'll be crazy. It'll be interesting to see if they ask more of the guards to try to get in there. Like, can Malik Beasley average 5.5 rebounds a game during a season? Because that would help a lot. Or are they going to try to get another big guy in there that can help Carl clean up the glass? Because, like you said, it was abysmal. If you look at the stats, it was terrible how much they got out-rebounded.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll wrap it up in a minute, but I want to give you the chance to get off your Jimmy Butler feelings. I know this is a safe space, and I know that Jimmy Butler has kind of rattled the nerves and the feelings of a lot of Timberwolves fans out there. Obviously, he left one hell of a sour taste in a lot of our mouths when he kind of threw the toys out of the stroller and decided he didn't want to play for Minnesota anymore. But what are your thoughts on Jimmy Butler? Good, bad, great, horrible? I want to know your thoughts.
I would never tell anyone how to be a fan, because it's just short for fanatic, and that's what we're doing. That's why you and I are doing a late-night podcast. So again, to each their own. But I just think, watching the bubble, after the play-in, that couple play-in weeks where everyone was trying to figure out, like, this is so weird, playing without fans and stuff, the level of basketball right now is so good. Like, the chess match between the Celtics and the Heat, who probably have, what, two of the four best coaches in the league? Like, what, maybe Spo and Nick Nurse? Like, they have – it's just such beautiful, beautiful basketball. And if you're coming out of that every night just being bummed about Jimmy Butler or what happened in the past, I just think you're doing yourself a disservice. Like, I just think what's done is done. They had their run. They wiped off that long playoff misery. Then it blew up in their face, and they made a lot of mistakes. The, you know, paying Wiggins, having Jimmy be the guy. Jimmy was right. Jimmy was right on a lot of stuff. Like I said, Jimmy's a dog. Jimmy wants guys like him, and that's why the Heat culture, quote unquote, is perfect for him. But I just, again, I think I was on one that one night when I compared it to, like, complaining to your spouse or partner about a prom date that went awry. I was probably had some wine. But I just think you're doing yourself a disservice if you watch Jimmy Butler play, who did, like you said, leave a super sour taste in not only Wolves fans' mouths, but also the Sixers. Like, he did them dirty. Like, he had the same complaints about kind of like a Ben Simmons and an Embiid and that whole situation as he did in Minnesota. And as much as I don't think I'll ever openly root for him or necessarily like him, if you don't respect him, I mean, that dude is making every play in the bubble, and it's just awesome. And it sucks that he's not doing it in a blue and green jersey, but I'm happy for him, man, because that guy puts in the work, and he's playing his ass off, and it's awesome. And just get over it. Even, like, the Tyler Hero thing, man. Like, I'm guilty of this one, being like, oh, you know, Tyler Hero would be awesome in Minnesota. But I don't understand why you would watch 2020 modern basketball and still be like, every time Steph Curry hits a three, like, oh, did you know he could have been drafted by the Wolves? Like, what a waste of time.
Like every player, half the players in the league could be drafted by half of the other teams in the league. Like, that's how the draft works. That narrative annoys the hell out of me. Like, you know, players get passed on every draft. Like, we don't crucify 14 teams for passing on Giannis and Antetokounmpo. Like, because it happens. Like, players become good and they don't, like, if the best player of every draft went number one every single time, then, like, no one would care about the draft lottery unless you he got the first pick. Like, that's how the draft is. It's a crapshoot. And, like, not picking a player. Like, you know, we didn't pick Tyler Hero. Like, we traded up and got Jared Culver. Like, Jared Culver could become good or he might not. And, you know, we can't do anything about it. Like, just enjoy watching. Like you said, just enjoy watching great basketball. Like, on the Butler point, it's just, I don't like Butler as, I don't like, I don't know, not I don't like him, but I don't like what he did for the team that I love. But it's, I love basketball and I love watching players ball out. And I love that Jimmy's a dog. I love that, you know, he found the place where they really accentuate his talents and everyone kind of works well with him because he's an awesome player. And I want to see awesome players in awesome positions, in awesome environments, do awesome things.
I'll never respect or approve of how toxic he made it to get himself out. But if you watch him, just allow yourself to watch him play good basketball and be like, wow, that guy is balling, without constantly bringing up the Wolves thing. And then also too, like,
and that goes for people who aren't just Wolves fans. I think that's what annoys me more about it, is that every 2 seconds it's someone who has no idea what even happened in the situation. It's like, well, Jimmy was right, you know, Towns is soft, like, Towns is this and that, and no wonder why Jimmy left. Like, why can't we just watch Jimmy Butler without talking about Carl Anthony Towns? Like, it was years ago. Like, hopefully Towns has found a position that an environment and a coach and a surrounding, you know, player staff that worked for him, because Jimmy sure has, and let's just enjoy it.
And you know what, too? Like, this is my last thing, I promise, but, like, I'm happy for him when he's balling out, and game two of the last one they won, like, he only had, like, 12 or 14 points, but this idea, too, that if Jimmy would have just stayed, the Wolves would be the Heat, it's like, that's so dumb, because the Miami Heat have done so many other things. And then this is where you can rip on the Wolves for being stupid, but, like...
There's no doubt that the Wolves were stupid. Like, we're not absolving the Wolves of any blame in this whole, in the whole Butler fiasco. Like, there's things that Towns get the blame for that he probably shouldn't, but there's things that he does get, that he should get the blame for, and, you know, likewise with the whole organization, but
Jimmy wasn't a needle mover in the sense of, like, if he stays in Minnesota, they're flirting with the NBA Finals. I mean, what Pat Riley has done with Goran Dragic and drafting Hero in the mid-lottery and drafting Bam and finding Duncan Robinson, who no one even knew about, like, they have a lot of other good pieces there. I'm happy.
No one can possibly think that Tibbs would have done that. Like,
no, he would have track record. He would have grinded it out probably another 18 months to 2 years and had a couple more first round exits, and we would just be all
signed,
over again.
Signed Kirk Heinrich to a 3-year deal.
Yeah, basketball is so good right now. This bubble has been better than, I think we talk about this on the side. This bubble has been better than, I mean, every night is chaos. Like, tonight, we were trying to record this earlier. I was like, we're going to have to wait. Anthony Davis is about to do something weird. Like, every night's awesome. Just enjoy it. And I know it sucks because usually we have to enjoy these games as outside observers rather than, you know, our team is playing. But the basketball is great. I think the Wolves are going to get it figured out. Things are going to start to pick up. We got the bubble, then the draft and free agency. So just, that's my story. You can cheer how you want, but man, you owe it to yourself, if you're listening to this, to just, like, enjoy good basketball, because the basketball right now has probably never been better.
Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, like you said, I'm not going to tell anyone how to root for their team, and I completely respect why people don't like Jimmy Butler, but yeah, just have fun with it. And like the whole kind of, you know, agenda has been today is just, rather than thinking, you know, we could have had this guy, we could have had that guy, like, look at teams and what they're doing in their systems and the way they use their players and try and apply that to the players who are on Minnesota right now. And that, honestly, I find that a lot more fun, just because that's something that could actually happen. Like, wishing that Jimmy Butler still played for Minnesota is never going to happen. Wishing that Steph Curry got drafted by them, or Jamal Murray for that matter, is just impossible. It's not going to happen. So, yeah.
And if you hate the Minnesota Timberwolves have given every fan of them countless reasons to stop cheering for them. You know what I mean? But you and I, who are, if you're still listening to this an hour in, and now we have transitioned into soccer talk, if, like, you and I are Liverpool fans, and for both of us, they're halfway across the globe, you can be a fan of whoever you want. So if you hate the Wolves and you hate everything they've done and you hate Carl complaining and you hate D'Angelo's defense, and you hate Ryan Saunders' nepotism, then just be a Nuggets fan. You can follow all the beat writers. You can follow all their team stuff on social, and you can just literally be a Nuggets fan. It's okay. Just, you owe it to yourself to have fun watching this because the basketball is so good.
Yeah, so sorry to everyone, but I knew that Carl had a 10-minute rant in him at least about Jimmy Butler, and I knew I had one stored up inside me as well. So
that was on the agenda that we had to talk about.
That was a little therapy session there, but I feel like a lot of people are feeling the same way about Butler, whether it's good or bad. But that'll probably do it for today. I'll be back again probably next week or the next week or the week after. But thanks as usual, Carl. You're a star.
Yeah, dude, I appreciate it. Have a good one. Everyone continue to stay safe. And like I said, keep checking the website. We've got canisupas.com. We've had a lot of good articles, I think. I think you agree with me. And it's only, we appreciate anyone who's been reading us over the last 6 months without anything to talk about. And I think now, starting Monday with this bubble, we're going to start to build up and it's going to be awesome. So I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure. Everybody, head over to canisupas. We've always got really good stuff coming out over there, and a lot of writers who are really dedicated to giving you guys content. Apart from that, like, rate, comment, subscribe, share, all that good stuff, and I'll see you guys next week. Thanks again, Kyle.
Thanks, man.